This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled, I Survived, So Can You. Lisa Sobrey is my guest. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Lisa, is this autobiographical in nature? Is it clinical case studies? How would you describe your book?
It's actually a book that women from Canada submitted stories about different types of abuse they survived, losing a loved one, surviving grief, I guess you could say. And it's the reason they submitted the stories is they wanted people to understand that they're not the only ones that are going through something. Somebody else has suffered similarly, and that regardless of what happens to you, you can survive, you can come out a successful person in the end if that's what you really want to do.
And this is not your first book, then, is it?
No, actually, it's the fifth book that I've written. The first four that I wrote are my own personal story. And then I've got this one. I personally got tired of living through traumas and living through it again when I rewrote the book. So I decided to open it up to anybody that wanted to submit a story, and they could share their experiences and then just have comments afterwards about where you can actually go and get help.
Where did you find the people who are the subject of your book?
Some of them were friends, and 2 years ago I went to university, and I actually have some university students that have submitted stories on different experiences that they've had.
Tell me about the motivation behind this. Why did you feel that this story or these stories needed to be put into print?
Because everybody has this understanding, I guess, or this attitude or thought that we're the only ones that experience this. Nobody else can understand what I'm going through because nobody else has experienced this, and there's no way that they can understand how I feel or what I'm going through or the thoughts that I have. Like, if I talk to anybody about this, they're going to think I'm crazy. So by opening it up and allowing people to submit their stories, we have this, okay, you know what, we're not alone anymore. Somebody else has experienced, maybe it's not as bad as what I went through, or maybe it's worse than what I went through, but at least somebody can understand what I'm going through. If you're thinking about suicide, somebody else has been there. This isn't just you. You're not going crazy. Other people have had these thoughts. And by knowing that somebody else has had this happen to them, and they found the help and they've been able to come through, it really encourages people to go find the help that they need. And then smaller towns, it seems to be very difficult to find a women's resource center or a men's resource center. This book is based on women, but it's men too. There's lots of men that are abused out there, and especially as kids, and they bring it through to when they're adults. So the main purpose of the book is the resource section at the back that says, here you go, go find some help. There is lots of help out there for you.
Individuals who have gone through deep depression, perhaps friends or relatives have taken their own life, it's a very difficult time in their life to process all of the emotions, to find a way to recover from it.
It is, yeah. And abuse, too. There's a lot of stories in there on sexual abuse and women that have been abused by their partners or their mothers.
And it's not just physical. Sometimes it's mental.
It's, yes, definitely. A lot of it is actually mental. Yeah, it's surprising how much.
Do you deal with self-esteem in this book?
Yes, I do. On the cover, actually, that's why we designed the maze that way, to show that this is, you know, you start in this place where you feel worthless and useless, and you think that everything is your fault and you're not good enough. And then as you move forward and start to heal, you go through that anger or frustration. You start to find your strength, start to find the resolve, and then you can come out happy and feeling worthy and confident and successful.
Your book, I Survived, So Can You, Who do you think this is going to appeal to?
I would say mainly to teenagers and adults. For the most part, it is, this one in particular is geared towards women because it is stories submitted by women, and it's anybody that has survived some type of abuse, whether it's sexual abuse or rape or molestation, and losing a loved one, losing a parent.
132 pages. Do you feel this book might also be of benefit to those who are counseling others who are in need?
Yes, I do. Yes, I believe that this book should be in universities, and it should be in libraries, and it should be in every counselor, psychiatrist, psychologist office. These are submitted stories. These are actual true stories with some pretty detailed experiences, I guess you could say. It's not a case study. It's not 100 women, and they've done a case study, and this is what we came up with. These are true, real stories about what women went through. And if they're in the libraries and they're in the universities, when the students are taking the courses to come out as psychologists and psychiatrists, and even doctors for that matter, or lawyers, when they come out of there, they have true experiences instead of case studies or information that's based, you know, back in the 1930s. This is today. This is women that are trying to deal with these issues today, and it's not something that you can fix overnight. It takes years.
I've been in a position of leadership where I was doing counseling for individuals and wish I had a resource like this. How long did it take you to put it together?
Just over a year. It was pretty close to a year from start to finish by the time the stories were submitted, and then it actually went to the editor, and then it came out in print.
You've mentioned you've written other books. Was there any self-discovery that developed from writing this book?
Yes, actually, I wrote in the first book that I wrote, it's called I Survived, and it talks about my own experience surviving abuse and how my relationships evolved from there. They weren't very good. They weren't very healthy. And with this particular book, I go into a lot of detail about why I actually tried to commit suicide at one point in my life. So it brought out more healing for myself. It seemed like the more I write, the more I heal within. And the more I share the stories, the more people send me emails and phone me and say, you know, thank you so much for writing this. And that seems to help me heal and helps me keep writing.
Well, stress and trauma is not foreign to anybody. How would you introduce this book to someone?
I would say that it's, if you want to heal, this is definitely a book to pick up and to start with. And it's stories from Canadian women that have survived, and they've written these stories to share with other women, encouraging them to take the first steps to move forward and start their own healing process.
This book should be unique reading for anybody that's in a counseling situation. I would certainly feel it should be recommended reading. Lisa, do you feel your book is different than other books in the marketplace? If so, how is it set apart?
I believe it's set apart because it's very descriptive details. When you're telling a story, lots of times people gloss over and they don't want to go into too much depth or too much detail because they think, well, I'm just kind of wasting a person's time. This book in particular gives you everything. It tells you the way that these women felt. If they were depressed, it tells you that they felt depressed, and it tells you how that affected their life and affected their working relationships and their family relationships. And I think that's why it's set apart more than other books. It actually, there is no glossing over it or no skimming. If somebody was swearing, then they're swearing in the book. There is, like I say, there's nothing that's glossed over.
It's a safe place for them to tell their story.
Yes, it is. Yes, and we did change the names and the places to protect everybody that's involved, too.
Was there anything about putting this together that was a challenge you didn't think was surmountable, but you were able to overcome it?
I was very surprised how many mothers actually had an effect on the daughters. That was the biggest surprise for me. Normally, I guess when you're dealing with abuse, you think, oh, well, there's, you know, there's been a, a parent or a grandparent or a sibling or something that's, you know, been physically abusing. And when I started reading these stories, I found that a lot of this had to do with the way mothers treated their daughters. The mothers, I don't want to say particularly selfish, I guess you, in a way you could say they were selfish because they put themselves first instead of putting their children first or their daughters first. But who knows what their life was like, right? What made them who they are today? What did they experience themselves to bring them where they are? But it was very difficult for me to, there was two stories in particular, to read and find out that, you know, the mother is the one that told the daughter that she wasn't good enough and that she didn't deserve any better than this. And it blew me away. It really did. I was really, really shocked, and I shed a lot of tears reading those two stories in particular.
Were those the stories that were the most shocking of the discoveries you made during this book process?
Yes. Yes, they were. I couldn't believe that that somebody could do that. I couldn't. And it was actually, one of the stories was the reason why I started writing the book. I thought, wow, this is, how can you do that? I'm a mother and I have children, and you would do everything in your power to protect your children, not to harm them.
Were there positive stories or positive outcomes from the stories that you've recounted in your book?
Yes. Every one of the women that has submitted a story in here has survived. They've gone to counseling and they've changed themselves, started to heal themselves, started to find the self-esteem and the self-confidence within so that they could change their lives. And every one of them actually has come out very successful, whether it's they're married and in a solid relationship or they have really good careers. Some of them have gone back to school and successfully completed school and are moving forward.
Fabulous. And where do we get copies of your book?
You can find them on my website, www.lisasobrey.com. They're also available at Amazon, Chapters, Barnes & Noble. If you Google, you'll find it. Just Google me or Google my name and the title of the book, and there's lots of places that come up for you to purchase it.
From my perspective, thank you for writing this book. It's titled, again, I Survived, So Can You. Lisa M. Sobrey is our guest author today. Thank you again for joining us, Lisa.
Oh, thank you so much.
For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, everybody. This is Pete Dix of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station? Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear these latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Connect with Juliana and connect with what lies beneath. Friday afternoons at 4 or 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Juliana is a marriage, family, and child therapist who wants people to connect. Connect with what lies beneath, those truths and answers. And through her counseling practice, she has helped others find their personal power and fulfill their dreams. And she wants to do the same for you. Here on Connect with Juliana. Through intimate discussions, intriguing subject matters, and the expertise of her guests. For more on the show and Juliana, check out her webpage. Connect with Juliana in media.com. Juliana will cover it all. Nothing is off limits. She wants to know what matters to you. Make the connection. Tune into TogiNet to connect with Juliana to find out the facts that could be hidden beneath the surface. Connect with Juliana on TogiNet to make a quality connection in your life. Friday afternoons at 4, 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, this children's book, The Adventures of Anu and Pashmak. And the author is Salme Moghini. And Salme joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Salme.
Hello, Steve. It's good to be here.
Well, great to have you here. I guess I should call you Anu. I mean, that's... But we'll find out about why that is your nickname in a moment. But this book, really interesting approach to help children understand their relationship with animals. In fact, all people and animals, as you put it, we need to become closer and more loving. Animals need to be respected and really take their place as equally intelligent, emotional, and spiritual beings. So you have a kind of a mission along with this book to teach children and I guess to remind all of us as adults our relationship with animals.
Yes, that's correct. Absolutely. Yes.
Tell us about your background, Salme, and how this book came about.
Well, there are different levels, actually, to my background and how this book came about. I do have a psychology background, and I studied transpersonal psychology, which is a spiritual form of psychology. It's body, mind, spirit. However, I do have a clinical background, too. And I have an emphasis in education and the arts, and after that, I started studying at ASN, which is called Animal Spirit Network, and it's a school that teaches about animal communication and working with animals and learning from animals and studying a variety of ways to connect with animals. And through the course of time, I have worked with children on an academic level, on a psychological level, on an emotional, spiritual level, as well as with, adults. And I've spent a lot of time around animals, and not only my own, but other people, and the way that animals have shown themselves to me, and at a very young age communicated with me, had helped me really cultivate an understanding of not only my own intuitive awareness, but the fact that they're very intelligent beings that can very well communicate, are very well connected to their own psyche, and actually can communicate that on a very deep emotional level, which then can act as sort of a mirror to us as human beings to be able to, heal our inner wounds and grow as spiritual beings on the planet. And all of this is tied in my background. And I'm trying to actually not only educate children, but bring this into the scope of psychology and use this as an integrative tool for us to grow and to become self-actualized human beings on the planet, but most particularly starting with children. And so that's a little bit about my background and how this kind of evolved and shaped this book.
So The Adventures of Anu and Pashmak. Pashmak is this fluffy white cat that actually was your cat.
Yes. For 17 years, we had a very enriching life together. It was very long, and I learned a lot of things from him. So, yes.
And you are Anu. Tell us about Anu. Where'd that name come from?
Well, when my niece was born and when she was first starting to learn how to speak, she wanted to call me Auntie and she couldn't, so she started calling me Anu, and that just became my name. And actually at the time that she was growing up, that's when I got involved with writing children's books, and I would, there was a lot of things opening up in me at the time, and that just sort of, the name sort of connected with me, and it became a part of who I am, and now it's a character in a book, so that's the evolution of the Anu name.
Talk to us about this sixth sense. So important. We all are aware of our five senses, but this sixth sense and how that ties to animals and how it helps all of us as humans.
I like to look at the sixth sense as a connection to the heart. And when our heart opens up and we start to connect with our heart, and then connect with the world and with nature, a lot of things show themselves and reveal themselves to us. It's our connection to our source, our creator. It's a connection to each other. And what I realize when working with animals, not only in a psychological environment, you know, but also in a relationship environment between just a person and their animals, and what I've noticed is that animals have a beautiful way of validating our sixth sense and our feelings and our the area in our heart where we keep a lot of things that we may not necessarily share with a lot of people, but it's on a feeling level. And it's a language I feel animals use to survive and to communicate with one another. And it's a very honest and pure place of being. It's the authentic self. The sixth sense really contributes to the authentic self. And it helps us really develop a life that is rich and deep and meaningful. And also, if we have dreams and goals we want to carry out, it really helps us unfold in that way and makes things available to us. And actually, the power of manifestation reveals itself to us, and things unfold naturally and peacefully and joyfully without too much pain and suffering and force. And I also have come across that animals live in this way. They live in this reality. And as children, when we're growing up, I don't know what happens. I mean, there's a lot of things that happen, but we get taken away from our natural sense of self, our natural ways of being, our intuition, our creativity, our imagination. And we need to learn how to establish this on a tangible level, I believe, in the educational system as well. So going back to, this is all coming from the sense of intuition and a sense of every person having that unique talent and way of communicating and connecting with their source and their heart. This is all a part of the intuitive self. And then developing that part of oneself to manifest one's calling in life, one's talent in life, and to create more harmony and love, which this planet right now really, truly needs right throughout the world.
Definitely, definitely. And you do this in a very unique way. It's just some questions and some answers to questions through Anu and Pashmak. And, of course, it's illustrated very creatively, very colorfully, very simply, but very pointedly. In fact, right at the beginning, you asked this question, did you know there are so many ways to see life? And then you give us a bunch of examples.
Yes, yes. I feel that children are, technology is a beautiful thing. I mean, without technology, my book wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be able to, you and I wouldn't be speaking. I wouldn't be able to be a voice in the world. Technology is a wonderful thing. But we also have to realize that we're living in a world that also has nature included, that our lives are filled with so many different kinds of stimulus. However, we have to realize that all of this, we can't let it override what is happening on the inside and our feelings, and how can we integrate all of this to make a better planet for ourselves. When I speak about life, especially what you just had said, these are all different aspects that one can see life. But my, not fear, but my concern about children growing up with all of this stimulus is that it can also interfere with us connecting with life and with our heart and on a feeling level, on a real sense-oriented level, because it can exhaust us, it can drain us. If we have too much going on, if we have too much stimulus that takes place on a daily basis, and right now children are so geared towards productivity and, you know, creating and being the best they can. And there's so many things filled in a child's schedule nowadays that compared to when I was growing up. It's the amount is unbelievable, that it could actually wear them down to a point where they're not connected to their senses anymore. And I wanted to plant a seed in the consciousness of children growing up as they're very young, that being connected to life and feeling alive is one of the most important aspects to life. And necessarily it doesn't have to be connected to technology and a lot of things that we're connecting ourselves to right now. It could just be about going outside and smelling the fresh air, being on the beach, or exploring all the wonderful things that nature and the animals and all the living things that are on our planet can offer. I'm concerned that relationship might get lost in all the mist of everything else that's forming in our planet today. So that's these lines have a lot of meaning behind them. But as I'm introducing these concepts to children, it starts very simple, you know, just a very simple sentence with a simple image.
Well, it's when we think about all that you've just said and the need for that, it's so evident because kids today, they spend so much time. I know I look at my grandkids and they, you know, at the age of 3, they know how to use an iPad and an iPhone and play games, and it mesmerizes them, and suddenly they're not in control anymore. They're being controlled by whatever is in front of them.
Yeah. And that's an excellent point. And when we are controlled by other things outside of ourselves, we will never learn to be happy, because then we start to rely on things outside of ourselves to always keep us engaged and active, and we become very dependent on that. My book is the other way around. It's connecting on a level that comes from the inside. So it really gets imprinted in deeply inside a child, that if things on the outside, you know, sometimes don't work out, there's distress in family, there's just, you know, a lot of things can happen. A lot of children go through a lot of abuse growing up. And in order to cultivate that inner strength, the inner knowledge, the inner intuitive awareness, all of those things, it starts from the inside out. And when you do connect with animals, when you do connect with nature, when you do connect with simple ways of being on a moment-to-moment basis, that part of ourselves gets stronger and it grows and it becomes more alive within us. And it also, we begin to create that inner personality, per se, that will keep us healthy and keep us alive, you know, and survive, actually, as we grow older and life becomes more challenging. So
it's titled The Adventures of Anu and Pashmak. Salmay, tell us how to get your book.
You can get my book on all the sites right now. Amazon is carrying it. Barnes & Noble has it. If you go to your local bookstores, you can order it from all the local bookstores. Balboa Press, obviously, is carrying it, and basically, and you can get it in different countries too, and order it through local bookstores in different countries as well. Hopefully it'll be on the shelves. My goal is to have them in some shelves. Unfortunately, there are not as many bookstores left, but hopefully some that are will be carrying that too in the future. So,
well, thank you so much for being with us on Indie
You're
Book
welcome.
Publishing.
You're welcome. And also, I actually wanted to add, if it's okay, that I will be also selling my book on my own website too, and it's www.animalcarecommunication.com. So if people want to directly get them from me, and that way, if they want signed copies, I can actually offer a signed copy for their child or for themselves. If they want that, they can go directly to my website and get it from me directly.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you, Salmé, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you, Steve. It was a delight. Thank you.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing, Abbott Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title of the book is intriguing. The Judge's Wife is Missing. The author of this book is Dale German. His daughter, Pam Hare, joins us to talk about this book that was written by her father, Dale German. Tell me how this book came about.
Well, my father had written all of his life as a hobby, primarily. And he wrote this book towards the end, well, after he retired from work. He had joined some writing groups, and they were intrigued with what he wrote and suggested he take it a little bit farther. So he went ahead and wrote this book, and had it actually out with an agent at the time he passed away, but it had not yet been published, and it floated around with various other members of the family. But it was important to his immediate family, my brother, mother, and I, that we get his name out there with a book so that it was known that Dale German had written a good mystery. He wrote a lot of technical work that he didn't get credit for. He had a lot of patents in his name that he didn't get credit for because it went to the company that he worked with.
Was that Boeing Aircraft?
Boeing Aircraft Company,
yes.
Correct.
Okay. Pam, is this the only work of fiction that he wrote, or are there other things that might be put out into the marketplace in the future?
He had one other book. Actually, he wrote that prior to The Judge's Wife is Missing. It was the opinion of his writing group and the agent that took The Judge's Wife that The Judge's Wife is Missing might have a little bit broader appeal. The other book that he wrote was a little more sci-fi, a little out there, but I have it, and it may end up in print one day as well.
Well, hopefully we will hear about that in the future. This book takes place in Wichita. Tell me the backstory of this book.
Well, I think Dad just wanted to prove that he could write a good mystery. He was a chemist by education, more of a physicist by trade, but very much the scientist, very intelligent man, And I think he actually wrote this before all the forensic stuff that's out there, the CSI and shows of that nature, had not yet been on the air. But he had a friend who worked for the Kansas Bureau of Investigation in the forensics department. And he and Hugh would discuss different things. And I think that he just decided that he wanted to see if he could tie a mystery together, you know, use some science to kind of back up his findings and play the part of a police investigator.
This book has 252 pages. I would say a very sterling effort for a first-time author. Is there a storyline underneath all of this? Is there action? Are there scenes in here that would make a great movie?
I would like to see it be a movie. I look at it as more of an intellectual type mystery. There isn't a lot of action, run, shoot 'em up type action, but the book moves at a very good clip. It's been read by numerous people now, and I get reports constantly that it's a page turner, that people just don't want to put it down. And I think it moves at a good enough clip that it could be turned into a movie pretty well. There's a lot of chase scenes and things of that nature in it.
But primarily it's a discover, describe, and analyze approach.
Exactly.
Readers with an analytical mind and who love puzzles would, I'm sure, love to get a hold of this book.
Yes, I think people who enjoy puzzles and also those who just enjoy mysteries will enjoy this book.
Describe the process of getting this book published. Your father had written this a long time ago. What was the process?
He had found an agent for it prior to his passing. He passed away in 1999. The agent had it for about a year or two after Dad passed away, and Mom requested that she return it to us because she wasn't able to find a publisher for it. So she returned the book to us, and I had a family member who thought that he could get it published. So he had it in his hands for a number of years, and it still wasn't getting anywhere. And it's, as I said, very important to our immediate family that Dad's book be out there and be published. And so I asked for the book back and had, for other reasons, had done some investigating into different publishing houses, and had discovered that Abbott would be willing to take that and publish it. So I did the formatting and did some final editing on it and submitted it to Abbott for publication.
Your main character's name is Captain Amos Cooper. Tell me of his story. How did he get involved in this mystery?
Well, actually, he was retired. And the judge was somebody that he had locked horns with on numerous occasions. They weren't particularly good friends. But when the judge's wife went missing, he asked that the police department to call Amos out of retirement to investigate his case because he figured if anybody could figure out what happened to his wife, it would be Amos Cooper.
And Amos is the thread that pulls everything together.
Yes. He's the hero. He's who we follow throughout the story.
Is there a key phrase or idea that you would use to describe this book to someone who's not familiar with your father's writings?
I would describe it as a thinking man's mystery. This woman, the judge's wife, boards a nonstop flight in Wichita, Kansas. She's seen getting on the plane. She never arrives in Boston, the destination. As I said, it's nonstop. And so the whole book centers around the mystery of finding out how somebody could get on a plane and never get off.
That's an intriguing idea just on its own merit. Do you think this book has any similarities to other books in the marketplace, or will it stand on its own as a special read?
I think it's rather a unique take. I'm not familiar with another storyline that's quite so much centered strictly on a disappearance. There are, of course, other mysteries that you discover as you read through the book. But the primary thrust of the book is this disappearance, and the whole mystery evolves around that.
This sounds like a great read. I'm putting it on my list of books to put aside and spend time getting to know. Is there any content that I wouldn't let my, granddaughter see?
Not too much. Go to a couple of... There are a few scenes that would keep it from having a G rating, but pretty much it's the story itself. The language is, by today's standards, quite clean, but it's fairly clean. And there's no blood and gore, and there's not too much that's very risque in it.
Would you say this book would appeal to possibly teenagers and older?
I believe the story would appeal to teenagers and older, although there are a lot of references that rather date that might make it more appealing. Like there's a reference to putting on a Mantovani record. So there you've got two
what's
things.
What's a Mantovani?
First of all, what's a Mantovani? And second, what's a record? So.
Well, those are not so bad. I mean, they do have period piece literature out there that many authors write about and get read. Sounds like a film noir project to me.
Oh, it's nothing that would keep you from understanding the story.
Right. The storyline would not be shocking or off limits.
No, I don't believe so. I don't believe so. There is one scene that takes you to a rather seedy part of town, and there is some impropriety hinted towards, but it's not graphic in any description.
Fabulous. Was there a challenging part in putting this book together?
I think probably the biggest challenge for my father was making sure that all of the ends were tied up and that he left enough breadcrumbs that you guessed at the solution, but you were not able to guess the solution. For me, the biggest challenge was just to make sure that all of the fuzzies were cleared out, that you know, that there were no references made to somebody who'd not appeared before and things of that nature, since I wasn't as intimately acquainted with the subject matter as I would have been had I written it myself.
I'm sure your dad would be very proud of the fact that it is now in print. The title of the book, again, is The Judge's Wife is Missing. The author was Dale German, and we have been visiting with his daughter, Pam Hare. Thank you, Pam, for joining us today. Where do we get copies of this book?
You can order it online from Amazon or from Barnes & Noble or about any place. You can go directly to Abbott Press and order it from there. To my knowledge, though, I don't believe it's out in bookstores, at least not yet. We hope to get it there.
Sounds like a brisk read, and 252 pages. I could possibly read that in an evening. Sounds great.
Thank you, Jay.
For Indie Book Publishing, Abbott Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.